Hop Talk and Aliens, the William Clear Podcast.
Thank you, honey. I am William Clear. This is Pop Talk and Aliens, and it is a podcast. So thank you for being right three times. Speaking of three, this is our third episode. The first two episodes were Pop Talk in every way. We talked some Elton John. We talked some Star Wars. So now it's time to get into the alien thing. And what better place to start than the Roswell crash of 1947? It is the granddaddy, the big mama, of all great UFO stories, and nobody tells this story correctly, in my opinion. There's a bunch of documentaries, there's a bunch of books, there's movies, and they are convoluted. They get into all of these crazy details that aren't important. They try to spin it one way or the other. You're getting either the weather balloon aspect of things or you're getting the spaceship aspect of things. Now, if you're not familiar at all, here's the short version. In 1947, a rancher in New Mexico found a bunch of debris on his ranch, which was one of two things that we've boiled it down to at this point that we're given to choose from. A, bunch of popsicle sticks and tinfoil and kids' scotch tape. B, the remnants and wreckage of an alien spacecraft that traveled zillions of miles only to crash in the New Mexico desert. That's what we have to choose from. Neither one of those is totally believable. Both of those things have completely absurd elements. But here's the thing. 25% of American adults believe that a spaceship crashed at Roswell. 25%, and that's according to a number of studies. That's not just a number I picked out of a hat. So it's worth entertaining the idea. And I will try to entertain you as we do that. So 75% of people buy the government's weather balloon story, which leads me to believe that we are not living in an age of people questioning the government in this great grand age of enlightenment and the internet and everybody asks questions. 75% of people buy this weather balloon thing, and as I go through this, you are going to see that the weather balloon story is possibly as absurd an idea as the alien story. I'm not going to try to convince you. I just want to give you the tale. But it's important to keep in mind that for most people, anything is more believable than aliens. Anything. If the government came out tomorrow and said, actually, we were totally wrong about Roswell. Just wanted to give you an update. Actually was Jesus Christ's skateboard that crashed. Sorry, that's what it was. I think that there are honestly people that would fucking believe that over the alternative of it being an alien. That's what I think. So whether you are the person that believes in nothing, the alien, Jesus' skateboard, or the weather balloon, here's the whole thing in a manner that will hopefully be fun and easy to digest. There is a lot of shit going on in this thing, so let's look at it closely. Both stories are full of holes, and both stories have changed and morphed over the years to better suit their own narrative. Almost every living Roswell witness has passed on, and since the government has released their final word on the subject, it is a closed case. You either believe it or not. But not so fast. Because for most people, way too many facts about this thing have flown under the radar. Or the radar balloon, if you'd like, and we'll get into that. But this story is way too good to put on the shelf. As the dude said himself, Big Lebowski, new shit has come to light. And I'm not going to try and convince you of anything. Again, what interests me is these two stories, the official story versus the alien story, because when you put these two things toe-to-toe in the grand face-off, to quote the dude again, a lot of ins, a lot of outs, a lot of what-have-yous. Now, something else to keep in mind when talking about Roswell. It's important not to get too bogged down in names. Everyone who talks about this thing throws all these fucking names at you. It's confusing and it drags the story down. Most people's names in this are not that important. It's not a lecture. It's not a fucking murder mystery. So we'll talk about the major players. We'll talk about the rancher, who's Mac Brazel. We'll talk about Jesse Marcel, the intelligence officer, and a few other key guys. But don't let those bit parts slow you down. Don't get all fucking twisted up on the names. The overall story of this thing doesn't depend on it. I want to illustrate the events, the roles of these people, and the evidence, whether it be true or false or both. All right. 1947, July. Rancher Mac Brazel finds all this weird stuff on his ranch, and he takes it into town to find out what it is. Now, right here, first thing off the bat, the stories start to part ways. Some say he waited a few days to take it in and only took it in because a neighbor told him that it was a spaceship and he might get a reward if he turned it in. Some say he took it in right away just because. What we do know is that he took it into town. And he showed pieces of the wreckage to the county sheriff. The sheriff called the Roswell Army Airfield and talked to Major Jesse Marcel, the intelligence officer, and Marcel was then sent to collect the debris. Now, Jesse Marcel is possibly the most important voice in this whole thing. He was an intelligence officer with the 509th Air Force Bomb Group. These are the dudes who dropped the atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So being an intelligence officer for this group would probably require some knowledge of technology and radar, I'm thinking. Point being, Marcel was not just some foolio sent to clean up some garbage. He knew what he was doing. So he's ordered to examine the wreckage, and then later he was sent back with additional officers to collect all of it. They brought it to the colonel at the Air Force Base, William Blanchard. It was taken to him, who then had it flown off to Fort Worth, Texas, and some say flown off to Washington as well. Now, over the years, a lot of military personnel who claim to have handled the wreckage have come forth to speak to authors and researchers, and they've told a pretty consistent story. The foil, tinfoil-like material that had fallen onto Mac Brazel's ranch couldn't be burned or cut. And if you rolled it into a ball in your hand, it would go back to its original shape as soon as you put it down. Marcel himself, in later years' interviews, was adamant about this fact. And again, others were too. They took it to their grave. Now, the debris field was huge, so there was a lot of the stuff lying around and a lot of people handling it. So, over the years, a lot of stories. But again, they all tend to match up. For the most part, especially when it comes to the actual debris itself. Now, some of that debris, Jesse Marcel took home to show his family the night after they were collecting it. He showed his son, Jesse Jr., an I-beam, a rod sort of thing with purple symbols that looked like hieroglyphics, as well as the indestructible tinfoil. Jesse Marcel Jr. was 11 when he saw this stuff, and he maintained until his death, quite recently, that the objects were not of this earth. His story never changed for 60 years. He never embellished it. He never added to it. He just told every researcher and every reporter the same thing. An I-beam with purple hieroglyphics and indestructible tinfoil. He described the beam itself to be something that felt like wood, but was much lighter, much stronger, and not breakable. And again, with all these weird symbols on it. Unfortunately, and the thing that sucks the most for people who come down on the UFO side of the story, Jesse Marcel took all that stuff back to the base. No physical evidence was ever left behind. So now the weird stuff is delivered to the base, and then the military public relations officer tells the radio and the press that the government is in possession of a flying disc. The term is relevant, because prior to this, some military pilots had reported seeing discs flying in formations. One pilot in Washington, state, not the city, said that he saw 9 of these bad boys flying around in an intelligent formation. So flying discs were on the mind. So the story went out to the local Roswell radio announcer and several newspapers. One common misconception about the reporting of the Roswell incident was that it was only reported locally at Roswell. That's horseshit. It was reported by all kinds of papers after being put on the wire. The phone lines in Roswell were jammed up with inquiries. It was a big deal. But What they picked up, as we just talked about, was a bunch of debris. Tinfoil, the sticks, the unbendable I-beams. So where does flying disc come from all of a sudden? The news report just lumped everything together, saying Brazel found a flying disc on his ranch. He didn't. He just found all the sticks and shit. Where was the disc? Enter crash site number 2. Oh yes, a second crash site. This was the one with all the goodies. The disc and its residents. Said to be little gray men. Or, if you like, aliens. Now, the story of how many supposed aliens and what condition they were in, there's about 200 versions of that. Seriously. Over the years, people have come out of the woodwork to say they saw the aliens, or they transported the aliens, or they talked to the aliens. It's so many people with so many stories. Some claim they're the CIA. Few of them were actually students on a field trip that supposedly happened onto this thing. And how many of these dead aliens? Again, stories are all over the place. A lot of people say there were 3, some say 5, some say that they were all dead, some say that one was still alive and ended up hanging out at Area 51 for the rest of his life. It goes on and on. But what we do know is that there was a second site, or at least a site possibly near the ranch, that was more significant than the tinfoil and sticks from the field. That's your flying disc. Now, did anyone actually see this thing crash? One couple. One couple reported seeing a brilliant light speeding across the night sky before and heading downward several hundred miles per hour. And they apparently reported this before the flying disc story hit the news, but there's no confirmation of that. All we know is that they reported it. And so the disc or whatever, and its pilots or whatever, was supposedly taken to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Ohio, whereas the debris was taken to Fort Worth. Now the next day, after all the hoopla, the military releases a second story debunking the whole flying disc jazz. They say the object was nothing more than a simple weather balloon. No talk of bodies or anything, just it's a weather balloon, show's over, move on. They even had a picture that was taken and published with Jesse Marcel kneeling over a bunch of tinfoil and sticks. Like actual tinfoil and actual sticks. Marcel claimed, until the day he died, that the material he was posing in front of was not the actual wreckage. Which, again, if you look at his credentials and you look at the shit he's kneeling over in this picture, you can Google it, it begs the question, how in the world could he ever think that was anything but a weather balloon or a fancy kite? Not even fancy, just a normal kite. The stuff in this picture is as earthly as anything you're ever going to see. There's no way he mistook this for an alien ship. Which isn't to say it wasn't an alien ship, or that it was, but whatever it was, it's a safe bet that the shit in that picture is not what they picked up in the field. Marcel said, and I quote from my notes, "I know it was not a weather balloon, and I'd swear on the biggest Bible, it wasn't a missile or any part of an aircraft that we would know of." And he would know. He would have, at least back then. He knew something. So there you go. But what about these bodies? Nothing. Nothing at the time. No specifics about the hieroglyphics, nothing about the bodies, nothing addressed by the government. That shit didn't start until years later. So they've released this new story. It was just a weather balloon. Everybody go back to your fucking homes and business and shut up. And Mac Brazel, the original finder of the stuff, was taken in by the military and spoken to for hours. And when he came out of there, he was sent to the Roswell Daily Record newspaper, unhappy, and providing a highly revised story. In the news story, the material was just sticks and tinfoil, and the whole thing was overblown, it was no big deal. And after he had recanted his story, he told his family that he wished he had never brought the thing up to begin with. He says he was threatened, he was intimidated, and he was done with it. Now the radio announcer as well, he says he was called by the bigwigs in Washington and told never to speak of it again or the FCC would shut him down. And over the years, many of the Roswell residents who knew about the crash and military personnel, they've all said that they were harassed, they were threatened, they were warned never to speak of the event ever, ever to anyone. So at this point, these are the facts. The flying disc story has been pulled back, replaced by a weather balloon story. Mac Brazel's story has changed after being in the custody of government agents, and no physical evidence is left. End of story. Thank you for listening. This has been Pop Talking Aliens. I'm just kidding. Of course, that's not the end of shit. As the years went by, more stories, more people. They started coming forth with their accounts of the event, the aftermath, the bodies, the technology they discovered because of the disc. But basically, the first one to start this up again was Jesse Marcel. In 1978, he broke his silence and spilled his guts about what went on those many years ago. He talked to nuclear physicist and UFO enthusiast Stanton Friedman about the magic tinfoil, the unbreakable beams, the weird symbols, the whole deal. And from there, the floodgates opened, my friends. The next 30 years, there was a firestorm of Roswell books, movies, shitty TV specials, you name it, anything. Researchers locked onto this story. Witnesses were popping up like weeds, and this is when all the good shit started coming out. Fake alien autopsy videos, doctored pictures, I got, fucking got so good. And it stayed hot shit for 20 years. Roswell story. It's bankable. It's a moneymaker. It was a great story. Everybody loved it. Now, as a side note, I want to talk about Stanton Friedman for a second, the guy who interviewed Jesse Marcel. He is the godfather of the Roswell story. If it's not him getting Jesse Marcel to let the cat out of the bag, we're not even talking about this. Stanton, Dr. Friedman, he's a nuclear physicist after all. He's getting up there in years these days, but he's still out there banging the drum about UFOs, lectures, conferences. God bless him. And I mean, whether you believe him or not, because he can get pretty out there, but he has written a ton of books on Roswell, and he's got shit all over YouTube that's worth a look too. But if you really want a good read, whether you believe this stuff or not, check out Stanton Friedman's book called Crash at Corona, The Definitive Study of the Roswell Incident. But make sure you get the edition with the right cover, because it's one of the best book covers you will ever see. It's an artist's rendering of a desert skyline at night, complete with obligatory palm plants, with a little UFO sticking out of the ground, two dead aliens lying next to it, and one more dead alien hanging out of the window. It's classic. Stanton Friedman is convinced of an alien crash, and he will have no two ways about it. So he can get really ridiculous. But he's a national treasure, and he's worth checking out. So back to Roswell turning into the big deal tale after 1978. The amount of witnesses, the eyewitnesses, witnesses of witnesses, children of witnesses that came out over those years, it boggles my mind. Because where were these people for 30 years? I mean, from 1947 until the 70s, where were they? But, I mean, to be fair, it wasn't like anybody was asking them anything in that time. Nobody was reproaching them. The reporters and authors and researchers, they didn't start swooping into that place until after the Marcel gut spilling. But nobody? Until then? Witness testimony is a strange dog, man. I mean, in a court of law, a witness testimony will put someone in prison. But in a UFO case, hung jury, 100% of the time. Some buy it, some don't. But whatever these eyewitness motivations to speak, whatever their motivations were, whether it was to relieve the guilt and burden of carrying a lie, maybe feeling that enough time had passed that they wouldn't be hunted down by some government agent, or just to make up a story and get on TV. Who knows? Who knows what drives people? But some of them, mainly the military personnel who were verifiably involved, they told some interesting tales. One officer said he was on a plane to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base to store the bodies. He described this. He said he never saw bodies. He just saw crates being loaded in. He had no knowledge of bodies being discovered. He says that when the high-ranking officers loaded the crates onto the plane, one of them said, "We're making history, boys." Now, what, for a balloon? For a fucking balloon? And the interesting thing is that the guy who says this, that's the only story he ever told. There was nothing else but that. He didn't claim to have seen anything. He didn't claim to be special, that he knew anything. He just told that little anecdote about a guy saying, "We're making history, boys." And for me, it's very hard to balk at something like that, because I absolutely believe that dude. I mean, does it mean anything? Really? Just that guy saying that? Who knows? But the thing is, there were a lot of small stories and bits from guys with seeming credibility like that. Guys and dolls who seemingly had no reason to lie. Telling of the tinfoil magic, the beams, odd crates being loaded into the planes, words about bodies, seeing bodies consistently. A lot of consistency. And more than one guy did actually claim to have got a glimpse of the contents of those crates and described, yep, little gray aliens. The gray alien bodies. For years, this is what kept the story so sensational and the part of the story that kept the weather balloon excuse seeming so fucking stupid. There's no way I'm going to get into all the testimony here. There's way, way, way too much. But I can tell you, from everything I've read, everything I've seen, everything I've gone about with this Roswell thing over 20 years, some people saw something. There were some kind of bodies. Undeniably. Aliens? There will never be the evidence. There will never be definitive evidence. But here, this is a great story that is testimony that's worth telling. It's from the Roswell mortician. This guy, Glenn Dennis, spins the most fantastical tale in all of the Roswell lore. And the thing about this guy is that when he was first interviewed and started talking, his story was crazy, but he seemed to have credibility. He was a man of good standing in the community. He was respected, all that. But over the years, this fucker got interviewed over and over and kept adding and twisting and turning his shit until it could have been a book of its own. In the end, I mean, even the respected Roswell authors that were banking on his story started doubting him. And you gotta hear the shit. His claim, ultimately, was that at his mortuary, he received a call from the military the day after or soon after the crash. He says they asked him if he had any tiny caskets that he could fit small bodies about the size of children. So he's thinking that some children had died and he's concerned, and they say, "Oh, no, no, nothing like that. We're just checking." Now, soon after that, he says, he meets up with a friend of his, this nurse, this girl who works at the hospital. And she then proceeds to tell him that while she was working at the hospital, these military guys came in with these little dead creatures. A couple of them were burnt to a crisp. And the smell, she says. Oh, the smell. Again, this is all according to Glenn Dennis. So naturally, the people who were interviewing him asked him for the girl's name. And he gave them a name that turned out to be fake. And when they came back at him with, "Why did you give us a fake name?" He said, "Oh, I wanted to protect her identity." Well, and why not just say that in the first place? Then, after they pressed him more, he said, she couldn't be reached anymore because she ran off and became a nun. That's his story. Glenn Dennis lived until 2015. God bless him. He took that story to the grave. We should take it with a grain of salt. A lot of grains of salt. So the body stories continue. The military PR guy, Walter Hodd, who first released the story to the media, he made a sworn affidavit just before he died that he saw alien bodies. Sworn affidavit. And there's more deathbed confessions where that came from, believe me. So alien bodies, sightings all over the place. Never mind the pretend nurse. There's more than enough stories and testimony without her. And the government never said anything about bodies. So they were totally hiding it, and they've been caught with their pants down. And what do you have to say to this, Mr. Government? Alien bodies, what's your answer? They totally have an answer. They totally have an answer. Crash test dummies. That's the answer. That's the official government story. Flight experiments gone awry, crashed craft, little crash test dummies burnt to a crisp. Not one of them from another world. Not one of them alive and hanging out at Area 51. Turns out, the government has an answer for all of it. After all these years of the Roswell craze, after tons and tons of Freedom of Information Act requests, in 1997, the Air Force released a book called Roswell, Case Closed. In this, they address everything. They go down the checklist of claims and they give answers up and down the line. They even declassified a shit ton of information, boxes and boxes, all of which were gone through by the most hardened UFO researchers, the debunkers, Stanton Friedman, of course, right in the middle of it all. They found nothing. All they found was the government going through the list of claims. Let's break it down. Number one, not a weather balloon. They admit it. Yes, they admit it was not a weather balloon. Sorry, we lied. The first it was a disc, then it was a weather balloon. Neither. Sorry. It was a radar detecting balloon, a top secret balloon from a classified project called Mogul. The balloon was designed to float around and detect Soviet missile tests using radar equipment that was attached to it. That's where the foil comes from. That's where the sticks come from. Because it was so much bigger and more badass than a weather balloon, and it was so top secret that the material would definitely seem odd to the layman 509th Bomber Group intelligence officer who came in contact with it. Number two, not hieroglyphics. So the purple weird markings on the I-beams, as it turns out, when these Mogul balloons, I love this part, they weren't hieroglyphics because, as it turns out, when these Mogul balloons were being made, the government outsourced some of it to a kid's toy manufacturer in New York. Elements of a top secret project sent to a kid's toy factory in New York. Maybe it might be true. It might be true. I'm just saying. Now, what they say is that the toy factory used whatever tape it had on hand to tape certain parts of this thing together. And it just so happens that the only tape they did have on hand is this kitty wrapping tape with purple flowers and circles and shapes on it. So, when the thing crashed, and after it sat in the heat for a while, the ink from the tape sunk into what was simply balsa wood and became a stick that looked like it had purple hieroglyphics. The ink from the tape soaked in to the wood. So the government was unable to tape some wood together with duct tape, so they had a toy factory do it with kitty tape. Maybe they did. Maybe they did. I'm just saying. Well, you know, it's more believable than aliens, right? Sure. Number three. Dead bodies. Claim debunked. How? As I just described earlier, not dead bodies, not aliens. Crash test dummies. Landed. Nobody bothered to pick them up. Or, all right, I realize that when I talk about this, it sounds like I'm coming down on the UFO side, but I'm really not. It's just that the government story sounds so much like bullshit that it's just is equally as fucked up as the UFO side of it. I mean, you can add the story up both ways. You really can. You take either side of this thing, and you've got absurdity, but some consistency and some credibility, and you put it together, and you can get an alien spacecraft crashed. They picked up the wreckage, they got rid of it, they covered it up. Then their story didn't sit well over 50 years, so they finally had to come up with some shit to address the alien bodies, to address the hieroglyphics, to address the tinfoil, and to cop to the fact that it wasn't a weather balloon. Okay. You can buy that. Or it was a radar detecting balloon and it was top secret because it was a Russian nuclear detector. So when the shit fell down, they freaked out they said it was a UFO because maybe they thought it was, or maybe they just thought that was a better story to put out into the press than radar detecting balloon for war against Russians. And so they kept the shit under wraps as long as they could. And post-Cold War, they say, all right, just finally, just let it out. Finally, and people shut up about the UFOs. Here's what it really was. It was a radar balloon, a kid's tape, taped together with fucking purple paint and shit. And there you go. That's the story. But I submit to you this as I close out this fireside tale. I submit to you that if by some chance there actually was an alien spaceship that crashed in New Mexico in 1947, there is no record of it. There is, if there was a record of it, it is gone now. I refuse to believe that there's any secret box hanging around an Indiana Jones warehouse. There's no smoking gun. There's no document. There's no alien ship at Area 51. Actually, hold that thought, because I'm going to do Area 51 in another episode, and yeah, we'll just leave that there, okay? But honestly, I mean, what proof is there? Hidden away somewhere? Nothing. Nothing. Whoever knows that is taking it to the grave, and is probably already dead. I honestly believe that that secret will die with the last person who actually knows it's true, and there's nothing that's left on this earth that will prove it. So there you go. That's the Roswell story in short, hopefully fun and easy to understand form. Now you know all the stupid shit that they never talk about, like the purple tape and the mortician with the little caskets that the government was asking for. All these things, to me, great stories, good stuff to know. If you want to know more about Roswell, dude, go to YouTube. You'd be on there for 35 years looking at shit. There's a ton of books, Stanton Friedman, all that good stuff, but everything you come in contact with is going to try and sell you one version of this story. I want you to know about the players, the stories, the events, the excuses, the theories. What's your theory? Pop Talking Aliens. I am William Clear. Thank you so much for listening. We are going to have guests episodes coming up. Bob Murray will join me. We'll talk about comedy. Charlie Crabtree will join me. We'll talk about the Grateful Dead and other forms of wonderful, unusual music. I will come to you in the next couple of weeks. Until then, enjoy Star Wars The Force Awakens. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. And Happy New Year. We'll see you soon. Cue the hot chick.
Pop Talk and Aliens, the William Clear Podcast.